This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. Former Normal Community High School baseball standout Jake Wegner has now beaten cancer twice and hopes to play the game again.
Well, I always have had it in the back of my mind just because I love the game of baseball. But again, you know, it's just a game in reality.
GLT's Eric Stock reports on how Wegner has overcome the big C and losing 60 pounds because of treatments. And John Norton talks to a Bloomington hip-hop artist who says positive messages in his songs are connected to his religion. After a GLT news update, this is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from GLT listeners. Join the community of news consumers who listen to Sound Ideas and are also willing to support it financially. Learn more about listener-supported radio and GLT at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. President Trump's approval ratings are in the 30s following his statements in support of Russian President Vladimir Putin and Trump's flip-flopping on the election tampering issue. Some Republicans worry Trump's unpopularity will sap GOP turnout in the November election. GLT's Charlie Schlenker talks with Republican State Senator Jason Barrickman about what he makes of Trump's statements.
Well, I think recent events, specifically his the manner in which he handled Vladimir Putin and the words that came from his mouth, you know, ultimately in that joint press conference are very concerning. I think so concerning. We saw him walk it back almost immediately thereafter. I think we've all come to understand that the office of the president comes with it a deep responsibility. And that words matter. I mean, words matter in all of our positions, yours on the radio, mine in public office. When the president speaks, the world listens. And I thought he handled Putin totally inappropriately. He didn't recognize the history and the evidence of what a ruthless dictator, you know, Putin is and where his self-interest lies. And I think we need President Trump to be more aware of that, more in tune to the very capable advisors that I think are in our federal government. In this instance, intelligence advisors, you know, clearly gave President Trump information that he, seemed to dismiss. And I think he recognized immediately the mistake that was made there.
With his stance on trade, which is not a traditional Republican stance, and indeed not a mainstream Democrat stance anymore, with his remarks on foreign policy recently, is he becoming a liability to the base Republican Party?
Well, you know, Trump as a candidate and as a bit of a standard bearer, has some, some pluses and minuses. You saw that in his own election, where the country was deeply divided, some with, just an enthusiasm of support that seemed to be unprecedented. And in the same manner, on the other side, opposition that seemed, just as motivated. I think those same supporters who delivered the Trump, administration, the Trump presidency or victory, those same supporters have existed and still exist in the Republican Party. I look at the Obama administration as one which veered our country to the left. In doing so, I think the Obama administration angered a lot of Republicans who then were motivated to, as politics does, swing the pendulum in a significant way in the other direction. So I think that's what you saw. Now we move into in Illinois, we're moving into our own November elections where Trump's not on the ballot, yet every candidate, even down to a local level, is trying to hang the Trump presidency and the Trump administration around the necks of Republican candidates up and down the ballot. You see it with Governor Rauner. You see it, again, all the way to local candidates. I suppose it's not much different than Republicans who are trying to hang Mike Madigan around the necks of Democrats, Pritzker on down. So, you know, this is, I suppose, the business of politics these days. For myself, I've always said we need to, you know, try to paint an optimistic picture of our vision as public office holders and as candidates. You know, paint a positive and optimistic picture of where we want to take, in my instance, the state. I think that message has, I think there's an audience for that message that's not, you know, that very much wants to hear from candidates, not on identity politics, not on, you know, negatives about the other person, but on what positive things individuals want to do for our state.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. With us is State Senator Jason Barrickman. The governor recently signed one of your bills, Senate Bill 5440, to try to address some of the grant funding procedures that you have seen errors in. What do you think that's going to do for the state?
Well, that legislation took years to put together. It was the result of a program initiated under the Quinn administration called the Neighborhood Recovery Initiative, NRI. We audited that program. The legislature audited that program and found that the Quinn administration created this program seemingly overnight in the wake of the, I think it was the 2010 or 2014 elections where Quinn beat our local Bill Brady for governor. This program, which had not existed, came into fruition under the Quinn administration. The Governor Quinn shoveled tens of millions of dollars into the program. It was distributed under the guise of combating violence in the streets of Chicago, when in fact what we saw was that it was distributed in huge amounts of money to political leaders in the Chicago communities, some of the most violent pockets of the city of Chicago didn't even receive money. It was all seemed to be driven by political decisions made in the Quinn administration.
So how does this create a better process?
So what we did is eliminate the ability for a governor to siphon away or squirrel away money in state funds which have no oversight and accountability by the General Assembly.
Any governor, regardless of
that's
party.
That's right. That's right.
So what happens then with a grant program that presumably has better guidelines on distribution and is more targeted then?
So, you know, and we try to be careful with the legislation that I advanced not to break the good programs that are out there receiving grant dollars and delivering services that are needed around the state. We worked with our human service providers. We worked with those in higher ed and others who receive lots of dollars in state and federal grants, and we carefully crafted the legislation not to inhibit what they're doing.
Why is it, considering that it was specifically tied to that governor and that program as a make good or a corrective, why did it get Democrat votes? Is it that Quinn is enough in the rearview mirror to allow what could be considered a routine piece of legislation to escape political considerations, or just what?
You know, who knows? I'll let you call a Democrat in here to say why they supported it, but I think the reality
was, you had to be in negotiation about the bill and about the considerations.
I think the bill on the face of it is good public policy. The audit was evidence of something that was broken. And I sit on the audit commission. I'm the co-chairman of the audit commission. We are tasked with reviewing the performance of state government and state agencies, identifying lapses, and potentially changing state law to address those lapses. This NRI program was just such a very significant abuse of power that I think even Democrats, who maybe were initially slow to come to the table, you know, when this program was first audited, I think now it's been several years later, the smoke's kind of cleared on the Quinn administration, we've all moved on, he's out of office, and people looked at this legislative proposal objectively, and they said, absolutely. There is a clear separation of powers that exists between the legislature and the executive branch. The executive branch is charged with spending money, but only with the oversight of the General Assembly. And the fact that the law allowed a single actor, the governor, to spend money in this manner, which lacked accountability and, you know, lacked, you know, some of the safeguards that we would normally expect, that program spent over $50 million in a matter of weeks, for which we all look at today and say we didn't get anything out of it. So people viewed that as overly political. I think legislators on both sides of the aisle said this is a situation that needs to be fixed. And, you know, we put legislation forward that I think does just that, regardless of whether you're a Democrat or a Republican.
Another aspect of summer bill signing season is House Bill 5627 to alleviate the teacher shortage. What fingerprints did you have on the Senate side of that?
So, you know, over the last year or two, we started hearing from especially our school administrators, your superintendents, principals, those who make hiring decisions at schools, that recognized or acknowledged that there is a difficulty in attracting teachers to some of our schools. I think this is very significant in some of our rural communities. It's very significant with some of our, specialties, whether it's, you know, a teacher that focuses on math and science or special ed. So there's this challenge out there. We assembled, over the last year, a number of stakeholders and tried to solicit from the public their ideas on how we attempt to remedy this or at least help. And I think the legislation we put forward certainly helps. It reduces some of the burdens that one must go through to become certified as a teacher, the idea being that you might open up the market a little bit more, so there'd be more who are licensed and available to teach. I will say that I think we've got a long ways to go on this, and some of it is directly controlled by the laws that are in place. I think there's more that we can do there that will result in not dumbing down the standards, but allowing for a more robust and larger universe of people who want to become teachers in Illinois. There's another side of this that is, I think, merely political. You know, our teachers in our state have had a bit of a bullseye on their back for years. You've had people campaigning for office and criticizing those in the field, criticizing some of the benefits that are available to our teachers, and that has had a negative toll on the market of people who want to go into teaching in Illinois. And it's very unfortunate because I've yet to find a teacher who is responsible for the governmental decisions that have been made.
State Senator Jason Berrickman, thanks so much for joining us.
Always nice to visit with you, Charlie.
State Senator Jason Berrickman spoke with GLT's Charlie Schlenker. He represents portions of Bloomington Normal, though the 53rd District stretches north and east into Livingston and Ford counties. This is Sound Ideas. Russia has been a national topic this week after President Trump's meeting with President Putin in Helsinki, though details of their involvement in the 2016 election federally are still being sorted out. Illinois has confirmed that hackers breached their state voting database. IPR's Sarah Jesmer has more.
It started with a system glitch in the summer of 2016. Hackers found a flaw in the online voting registration process in Illinois and exploited it. Illinois State Board of Elections spokesperson Matt Dietrich says the board's servers were inundated with queries, which are lines of code.
After they had been in our system for 2 weeks without us knowing, they started flooding our system with queries. And they did it in such a way that they were injecting 5 queries per second, which led to our server slowing down to a crawl.
This notified IT staff, but by then, it was too late. Hackers had already learned enough about the system to piece together the bits of encrypted voter information that they collected.
It was not something where a layman would even understand what they were getting. It was, you need to be a hacker to do it.
The state board determined that hackers had compromised the information of at least 76,000 people in Illinois. 2 years later, the state has rejuvenated talks about this breach. A single unnamed state is mentioned in a federal indictment against Russian officials.
It would have been disingenuous for us to come out on Friday and say, oh, we really don't know if it's us, because we're not named in it. We really don't know. We do know that our episode happened in July of 2016, which is what's named in the indictment.
Dietrich says $13.2 million of federal funding has been given to state officials to strengthen its election security. Dietrich says jurisdictions should not only run elections, but proactively guard data from future hacks.
They could go for the weakest link in the system in Illinois. They could go for some of the less populated counties where they have very small county government, where they may not have an extensive IT department. They likely will try to exploit any weak link in our system.
From the outside, it looks like big changes are coming to voting in Illinois. In local jurisdictions like DeKalb County, though, not much will change. DeKalb County Clerk and Recorder Doug Johnson is confident that the county has already been doing an exceptional job in database management and security practices.
The ultimate one that I always want people to know in DeKalb County is that we use paper ballots. And ultimately, if there was ever a problem, we will take those paper ballots and hand count them with humans.
Paper voter registration cards are also a norm in DeKalb.
Nature of things going on in the country right now with the election systems and everything, it seems that there's outside forces that are trying to make people in the United States lose confidence in their election process, lose confidence in their leaders and everything else. My experience in the military has taught me that is a very Russian style of influence that's coming in.
Youth involvement will be a focus in the upcoming election, and Johnson hopes they're not deterred to vote. DeKalb High School graduate Lizzie Warner organized a walkout at the high school last spring in response to the shooting in Parkland, Florida. Warner, who is 18, says she's not registered to vote, but plans to before the midterm elections. Hacking or not, she says it's still important to participate.
So I'm still going to continue to vote and push other people to vote, because even though this can happen, it doesn't mean that it is always going to happen, and it doesn't always mean it will affect you.
Illinois' new automatic voter registration system is now active. It centralizes the voting information database. Officials hope it will create more accurate voter records. Dietrich says that increased digitization is inevitable, and threats of hacking shouldn't stop growth.
Whenever you're dealing with cybersecurity, what you're trying to do is stay a step ahead of the hackers, because it is a constant, constant race, and that's not going to change.
On Tuesday, Governor Bruce Rauner says Putin and Russia are not our friends, and the president should focus on holding them accountable. I'm Sarah Jesmer.
After a break, hear the inspiring story of a young baseball player turned coach who's beaten cancer twice. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for GLT comes from Brad Barker Honda, working with car buyers to match them with quality, reliable vehicles suited to their lifestyles and budgets. Veterans Parkway and GE Road in Bloomington, or online at bradbarkerhonda.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
And this is Sound Ideas. With help from the federal government, Illinois would put more than $2 billion toward infrastructure projects this year across the state's network of roads and bridges. But as IPR's Sam Dunklow explains in Illinois Issues, that network is underfunded by billions more. And what the state has pledged so far is a far cry from fixing that.
Just days before Illinois passed its budget in May, Governor Bruce Rauner took a drive up to Peoria, stood across a worn-down bridge over the Illinois River, and told reporters this.
We are announcing $11 billion of investment in our roads and bridges over the next 6 years.
That investment he's talking about is spelled out in the Department of Transportation's multi-year plan. It's how the state maps out what kind of road work it's going to do over the next 6 years. What's interesting this year is that Illinois is changing its road strategy altogether. Before, the state used to just fix the roads and bridges that were in the worst shape. Now, it plans to do regular maintenance to avoid costly future repairs. While experts say that's a good first step.
It would be better if there was now revenue to help them not only meet their goals, but exceed their goals, because the goals, quite frankly, are low.
This is Kevin Burke. He's the executive vice president of the Illinois Asphalt and Pavement Association. He's talking about IDOT's pavement condition goals. Officials are shooting for Illinois roads to be at or better than a fair condition over the next few years. Burke says if that's the goal, your commute probably won't get any better.
You're going to see a lot of cracking. It's going to be a rougher ride. There'll probably be better chances of potholes, especially in the winter months when we have freeze-thaw cycles.
Even with the billions of dollars and the new strategy IDOT is promising, Burke says that's just not going to cut it because Illinois has underfunded its roads for so long. Though it shares road costs with the federal and local governments, Illinois has gradually cut its share since 2000, while federal dollars have steadily accelerated. So much, in fact, that
about 80% of our program is funded with federal dollars.
That's Erin Alleman, director of IDOT's Office of Planning and Programming. She's one of the state's leading transportation planners. And like Burke, she says there just isn't enough revenue to do the work that needs to be done.
I'd say less than 10% of our projects expand the system that we have right now, and 90% really focuses on maintaining.
But now that it plans to keep up with that maintenance, Alleman says she's confident the roads will hold up better for longer. To get under the hood of all this, I joined Dave Bender, a road engineering expert, at the side of Interstate 55, one of the busiest highways in the state. I asked him for his take on Illinois' new strategy.
Overlaying with additional asphalt or other patching of concrete simply does not address the decay of our system.
Bender explains the interstate system alone in Illinois is long overdue for an upgrade.
They were built in the 50s and 60s. The interstate highway system was designed to last for about 40 years. Today we're on year 60. The foundation, which is several feet deep, is starting to just decay.
Bender likened it to an old house that needs a foundation repair.
And they think fixing the house would be very similar to what we're doing with the Illinois roads. They'll be putting on shingles on a new house and thinking everything is ready to go.
So we know Illinois needs to put more money into its roads. Experts and officials agree this means a new revenue source. What the source could be is unclear. They've tossed around ideas like raising the gas tax, something the state hasn't done in more than 25 years. Another idea is to tax people according to how many miles they drive. Neither idea is particularly popular, though, as Lawrence Massal of the Civic Federation explains.
There has been little political will to tie the state's infrastructure and capital needs to paying for them.
Massal says that's because the state recently raised its income tax while local property taxes went up. He explained Illinois is also running out of room to borrow. So if the state needs new money from taxpayers, Massal says it'll have to show them they'll get something out of it. For now, Illinois remains behind on its road spending. But as Dave Bender told me, we rely on the roads for just about everything. If the trend of underfunding goes on much longer,
that system someday is not going to become reliable or possibly even available unless we address funding.
I'm Sam Dunklaw.
Coming up later in the show, hear from hip-hop artist from Bloomington who's performing tomorrow night at Night Shop. This is Sound Ideas.
What looks like journalism these days sometimes isn't. At GLT, we answer to listeners, not advertisers or corporations. Listeners help pay for news and the reporters who cover the facts. Eric Stock, a 27-year news veteran covering Bloomington Normal.
Contributor to the recent spike in gun violence.
Mary Cullen, her last beat, the State House.
Frontier Airlines is coming back to Central Illinois.
Independent, financially supported by listeners. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.
Support for GLT comes from Heil Group, providing collaborative workshops and individual coaching designed to transform employees into effective leaders. Heil Group gives employees the guidance and feedback they need to attain their strongest possible performance. Information at heilgroup.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
And this is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. Coaches are often defined by wins and losses, but a Bloomington man who became a head coach in the most unlikely of ways at age 21 already has a significant victory to his name. He's defeated cancer twice. GLT's Eric Stock introduces us to Jake Wegner.
Wegner was a senior at Normal Community High School in February of 2015, a few months ahead of graduation, had a bright career in college where he was planning to continue his baseball career. Then his life changed forever.
You know, I just wasn't feeling right one day and stayed home from school for a few days. And then finally went to go get a checkup at my doctor's office. And they originally thought it was like mono because I had a big like bulge in my stomach, but then we did some testing and like an ultrasound, and they knew it was more serious than that, so they sent me to Peoria, the St. Jude Clinic in Peoria, and they found out it was a cancerous tumor in my stomach, and had to have surgery a few days later, and it was a 10-pound tumor the size of a football removed from my abdomen, which they found out to be neuroblastoma.
So what's going through your mind as the doctor is explaining this to you and your family?
I mean, I was a little more calm probably than my parents were. I'm sure, it's very hard on a parent to hear that about their child. But, I was just staying calm in the moment and wasn't afraid of anything. You know, no thoughts racing through my mind. The only thing that was racing through my mind was, oh, man, I'm going to miss school and my baseball season. That's really what I was thinking about, which in the scheme of things wasn't the biggest thing to miss out on. But
at your age, people tend to think they're indestructible. They don't think about the long term or their fallibility, I suppose. Is that sort of where you were at?
Right. I'd really never gotten sick, so hearing the word cancer, you know, that scares you. Because you see it on TV all the time. You can see physical symptoms of people. It can scare you. But in that moment, I wasn't too worried about things. I didn't really know a whole lot in that moment originally.
What kind of prognosis did they give you, or did they know?
Well, the fact that I'd always stay healthy and, you know, work out and play sports, that helps my health. The thing that scared them, my doctors, was that neuroblastoma usually occurs in children 0 to 5 years old, and so getting it at the age of 18 was very rare and very unique. But they had a treatment plan for it, so that's what kept me confident in the fact that I trusted my doctors there at St. Jude, and the fact that they had confidence in the treatment plan for me really kept me calm and my parents calm.
Hi, I'm Matt Wegner. I'm Jacob's father.
Hi, I'm Lisa Wegner. I'm Jake's mom.
I'm sure it's a moment that will be forever with you, where you were when you found out that your son had been diagnosed with cancer. Can you take me back to that moment and what was going through your minds as parents?
Actually, Lisa and I were out of town. We were moving our daughter into an internship in Florida. And a good friend of ours, Bill Bauman, was actually the gentleman who took Jake to the doctor, to Dr. Weaver's office, and where he started doing tests and examinations of Jacob, and we made our way home from Florida as quickly as we could driving, but it was definitely a life-changing experience.
We didn't find out he had cancer till or that a possibility of cancer till after we had gotten home from our trip, but we knew that something was very wrong. And so, we were very concerned, and the fact we weren't there, didn't settle real well with us, so it was a little scary.
And in talking to Jake, and this might be an oversimplification, but he seems to have taken it all in stride, figuring that he had faith in the doctors, they knew what they were doing, they had a plan, and he was going to put his faith in them and carry it through.
That would be exactly correct. It wasn't an oversimplification. Jake made the process very, very easy as he expressed his faith in God and his love for his family and his faith in his doctors, and just was always very positive, has always been and remains very positive about his struggles with cancer and getting back and becoming the healthy baseball player he's always wanted to be.
We were able to stay really strong because Jake would tell us, he said to me when the doctor said, we didn't know he had cancer yet, but then when the doctor said you have a large mass on your abdomen, it might be cancer. And Jake could tell that I was pretty upset by that. And he said, Mom, he said, don't worry. Everything is going to be fine. And so, that helped us. We just stayed strong for him because we knew that he was, his faith was strong and that mentally he was good. So we felt like, okay, well, I'll deal with this together.
And now he's cancer-free and coaching again, hoping to one day play again once the pain completely goes away. How optimistic are you that he's going to get that opportunity again?
We stay optimistic about it. His body's still repairing from all the treatment. But, even if it's a couple years from now that he gets to play, that would be great. But, we know there's the possibility he might not ever play again, but I think he's okay with that.
Jake went through months of cancer treatments, first in the winter of 2015 during his senior year of high school, then again in early 2016 after a cancer relapse, which doctors determined was stage 4 neuroblastoma. He had to drop out of school at Central College in Pella, Iowa, because the treatments were so intense. He lost close to 30 pounds twice and has nearly gained it all back. Doctors ruled him cancer-free in May of last year. While this was going on, baseball was probably the farthest thing from your mind, or at least you knew that it wasn't anything that you were going to be able to get back to, whether as a player or as a coach. When did that start to come back to you to where you thought, well, maybe I can get back to playing again someday?
Well, I always have had it in the back of my mind just because I love the game of baseball. But again, it's just, it's just a game in reality. So it's not the most important thing in life, but I am a competitor, and that's one of the reasons why I do fight every day to keep improving my health and getting stronger, because I do want to come back, and the comeback is going to be so great. It'll be, I hope this doesn't sound selfish, but it'll be a great story when I finally can step back on that field and play again. But since at the moment I can't play, obviously, coaching this summer and being close to the game is important.
As fate would have it, Jake got an unexpected call from a coach he had known since he was 9 years old.
Hi, I'm Mike Brown, the general manager of the Bloomington Bobcats.
So in the third year of the Bobcats' return to the Midwest Collegiate League, you turned to a 21-year-old coach who had never coached or managed before to take over this program. You obviously knew something about Jake and figured that he would be a good fit.
If you didn't know Jake, I could see where it would look like a little bit of a leap of faith, but knowing him, knowing what a strong kid he is, what a strong will he has, because the season is a grind. I mean, it's 50 some odd games. His tremendous baseball knowledge, love of the game. So to me, it was a perfect fit. I just took a little talking him into it to get it, but it's worked out great.
So what was his reaction when you first posed the idea?
I think he thought I was kidding. I really think he thought I was kidding. And I think there was some reluctance on his part. Not sure if, you know, with guys being his age, if that would work. But it's worked great. The guys love him, and he's done a really good job.
As someone who seems to be a little more understated, a little more reserved than you typically see from a lot of the fiery baseball managers, how has his style fit the game coaching kids who are about his age?
I think it works well because they are his age. I'm not sure how they would take it if he was, you know, up in their grill so much as they, you know, they might take it from somebody who's older. You know, they know what a good baseball mind he is, and I think there's a lot of respect in that. And I think the fact that he is understated about it, and, you know, he's out here to throw BP to him every day if they want it. He hits in and out if they want it. So he's doing a lot of things to help them get better, and they respect and appreciate that.
Morning, Mitch.
The Bloomington Bobcats play in a wooden bat summer league of college-age players. Despite Wegner's age and his often calm demeanor, Wegner instantly earned the respect of his players, including Garrett Shea, a junior at Illinois Wesleyan University.
It was a little shocking at first. I was like, because I forgot the story, and then it clicked, like, who it was, and like, it was really compelling and, like, inspirational, really, that he's out here doing this, and he's been a really good coach.
Billy Moat played against Wegner back in the seventh grade and later in high school.
It's a different perspective for him, but I was just beyond excited to be a part of it. You know, having him back, he's patient, he's a great guy, always has been, and obviously he's the strongest guy I know, and, you know, he's brought that to the team.
The GM, Brown, says he looks forward to the day when Wegner will take the field again, not as a coach.
I look forward to hopefully getting to watch him play the outfield as a Bobcat, you know, down the road. You know, I hope that's coming. But in the meantime, we're just focused on winning this league this summer. And I know that's his goal. That's my goal. And, you know, seeing the smile on his face makes it all worthwhile.
So you're saving a roster spot for him?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He already has his jersey.
And for Wegner's part, he's not sure when that day will come, but his battle overcoming cancer has taught him a lot about himself.
Two things which kind of relate to each other. One, just how strong I am in my faith, because I just always know that God has a plan for me, and that there was a purpose for me going through all this treatment and enduring this. And then the thing that goes along with that is just finding my perspective, you know, having a great perspective in life. And what is most important, and the most important thing to me is, you know, my health, and I realize that now. And so now little things that maybe used to bother me in the past don't really bother me on a daily basis.
What do you think your purpose is now?
One, share the good news of St. Jude and all the good that they do, and help others going through tough times in life, whether it is going through cancer treatments. You know, I've talked with other cancer patients to help them through their treatment, or just other people who are struggling in life. They will reach out to me and ask for advice. And so I found that as one of my purposes for going through all this.
St. Jude covers the cost of all treatment for its patients. I'm Eric Stock.
Wegner has also been helping the coaching staff at Central College with hopes that he'll be able to play college baseball. This is Sound Ideas. Back to Sound Ideas. On tomorrow's show, we'll have a special broadcast of an Illinois Issues Forum from NPR Illinois, sponsored by AARP Illinois. It's part of an ongoing series of public policy forums around the state heading into November's election. We'll co-host one here at Illinois State University on September 4th. Now to a new face in the local music scene. Bloomington hip-hop artist Dominique Stevenson says positive messages in his songs are connected to his religion. Stevenson's stage name is V8 Vast Change. He'll perform at Night Shop in downtown Bloomington tomorrow in a show with headlining band Sunday Afternoon. Stevenson tells GLT's John Norton that he doesn't believe people can achieve happiness or good alone.
You can't have joy without understanding the love of Christ. Joy is what gives you happiness in those down and sorrow times. So I feel like in order to stay uplifted in that manner, you need to understand the love that God has for us.
Yeah. And if you lose hope, little homie, then the dream will die. But you gotta keep the dream alive. My grandma told me if you lose hope, then the dream will die. But you gotta keep the dream alive.
Playing the song Keeping the Dream Alive right now. It's from your album The Lost and the Found. What are you sampling? What's the music you're sampling on here? Sounds like an old jazz song.
I search for a lot of music online, and that producer is actually Tone Jones. You can find his music online by tonejones.com. He does a lot of music with some of the things have samples, but I believe a lot of the stuff he just kind of creates. He plays with a lot of live instruments, and I love the live instrumentation and the instrumentals that I like to use.
How long have you been writing rhymes? How long have you been writing poetry? Whatever, either way.
Oh, man.
Ever since you can remember, maybe?
I always played around with writing music. I just used to walk around the house singing, and my brother would be like, shut up, you know, but it was just what I did. I've never been a good singer, so please don't ask me to sing. But I've been officially writing music, as a rap artist for about 6 years now.
What jump started that?
Man, me and my friends, we used to always freestyle, just have fun, string words together. And I got hurt my sophomore year playing football on varsity at Normal West. And I was on bed rest for a week, messed up my ankle. And I was laying there, and I was just trying to stay positive, like we talked about. And I was praying, like, you know, this really stinks. And God was like, just write a song. I'm like, all right. I wrote a song. I liked the way it made me feel. You know, I got some emotions out. I performed it for, I think, my brother and my sister. And I was like, I like the way this feels. Yeah. So I just kept going.
What inspired you to become a performer? You're writing. Me, you can always write for someone else, but you also perform.
Yes.
What inspired you to do that?
Well, I love to be in front of crowds. I just jumped on stage one day because I saw my friend. He used to rap at church all the time. I'm like, man, I wish I could do that. And when I started writing, I was like, oh, I can't wait to get on stage.
Okay.
I can't wait to do this. So I watch other people perform, and I see their energy, and I'm like, I can do that. I can definitely do that.
You have a song called You Can Do It. And let me just play a little bit of the song here, okay?
You can say la 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 and they digging it. They want to know why I'm different. I'm on a mission to get it and spread out the truth. And I could never just watch and sit back while these people be lying all to the youth. They gonna tell you what you can't be. They gonna tell you what you can't do. And I'ma say do it. Do it. You can do it. You can do it.
Who are they?
Anybody that's speaking negativity about your life or your circumstances. A lot of people, they make it about a specific color, race, any of that, religion. It's not any of that for me. It's about anybody that's telling you what you can and can't be that does not have your best interests in mind. A lot of times in the black community, we have other people that messed up chances in their life, and they tell the younger generation what they can't do because they're afraid of that failure. But I don't want the younger generation to live in that box of failure. So it doesn't matter if it's your uncle or if it's your next door neighbor, if it's a police officer, as long as you're doing something positive, don't let somebody stop you from going down that path.
Let me play the other lyric here. Mama said, do it, do it. It sounds like your mother, who was involved in a number of other songs, or she's referenced in a number of other songs here, she was a real instrumental part of your life. How encouraging was she? How positive was she? Is that where you're getting that from as well?
Yeah, extremely positive in my life. She told us, you know, you could do anything that you put your mind to as long as you work for it. And so we used to clean for more wealthier people in town, you know, do their laundry, scrub their toilets, all of that. She just used to tell us to look around, work hard, But you could have this at a point in time in your life. You don't have to stay at this level. You can make it to the point where you have enough money to hire somebody to clean for you if you choose to do that. And things like that just really motivated me. My mom is just a very passionate person.
Do it. You can do it if you want to do it. Do it. You can do it. You can do it. Do it. You can do it if you want to do it.
Our guest is Dominique Stevenson. He lives here in the Twin Cities. We're talking about his new music. He performs as V8 Vast Change. He's going to be at Night Shop in downtown this week.
Yeah.
You were at the GLT Community Forum on gun violence recently, and you were actually on asking a question, if I remember right. It was about trolling.
Mm-hmm.
And it sparked something from even Chief Bleichner following up on what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that came out of there is there didn't seem to be connections between the community and especially poor people. And, of course, black people are disproportionately poor in our community. And mm-hmm. my reaction was, well, there's a lot of things to do. But then I thought about it. Well, if you don't have money, if you don't have transportation or access to transportation, if you don't have even knowledge that this stuff exists, maybe it's a bigger hurdle than I even realize, or maybe a lot of other people realize. How important is it that young people be involved in what's going on in the community?
Mm-hmm. I think it's detrimental to the success of the community.
That what?
That they are involved in different activities and that they do get exposure to other events than just what they see on the regular basis. There are events to do in Bloomington Normal, but we don't really hear about them. I know that they're posted on the website. Nobody really goes to the city of Bloomington website to find something fun to do in town.
Uh-huh.
Nobody thinks about that. I went to a city council meeting in 2017 and with the mayor, and they were talking about all the different events that they have going on. And I suggested maybe we work on a different marketing scheme. I believe they felt like the marketing was good, so we didn't really stay on that for too long. But we have to find a different way to get people exposure to these events.
Listen, this is for the people on the west side. Waking up early mornings, open up the curtains, let the sun shine. Thank God for another day. Thank God that my baby got a baby on the way. Though we ain't got money or success.
You've got Leah Marlene on here with you. She sings on a couple of your different songs. Another young talent here in Bloomington Normal.
I love her voice. She is extremely talented. It's so hard to work with Leah. I mean, she's so talented that everybody wants to pull a little bit from that. And, you know, she's still young. Man, if you look at her Instagram and things like that, she's in Canada one week, and then she's in Tennessee, and she's in California opening up for people.
It really hurts my soul to see the world fold. Listen.
One thing's for sure, it's always more money that you could burn. It's always a higher position you could earn. It's always more knowledge you could learn. Knowledge is power, it's also pain. What have we lost? Trying again. You notice the cost when you switch lanes. I pray that we see the beauty in pain. It's beauty in the struggle.
I'm looking at my life like, wow.
I wrote the song and I'm like, man, who do I know that sound good on these songs? Leah popped in my head. I'm like, I know she could do this. All the runs that she's doing throughout the song, I turned the beat on. She did it. I think she went through the intro, the first verse, and the chorus. And then she had to leave. So what I took those runs that she did, chopped them up, and I spread them out throughout the whole song.
Dominique Stevenson, I got one more song before we let you go, okay?
All right.
Since it's summertime, we got to have summertime fresh, right?
Summertime fresh. Take a breath in. Breathe out the stress. Leave out the rest. Confess you're blessed. These be the best. These be the best times.
Summertime.
Hey. Chilling in the summertime.
Who's Austin Willis?
Man, we go way back. He's a singer-songwriter. He has a band called Sunday Afternoon. I love their music. Austin, he's a good guy. He writes all the material. He also plays lead guitar in it.
It almost has a feel of that goes back some 30 years with DJ Jazzy Jeff. Remember Summertime itself?
Uh-huh.
This has a similar feel to it. And it just kind of puts a smile on your face. And it needs to be played in the summertime,
definitely.
Right?
Definitely. I've been telling people, this is the song of the summer. People just don't know it yet, you know?
That's Bloomington's Dominique Stevenson speaking with GLT's John Norton. Stevenson Performance's V8 Vast Change tomorrow at Night Shop in Bloomington. You can discover more local music and hear from artists playing in Central Illinois on the GLT Music Podcast. Find it on NPR One or your favorite podcast app. Thanks for choosing GLT's Sound Ideas. Our website is where you can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories with help today from Charlie Schlenker, Eric Stock, and John Norton. WGLT.org is the first place to go to subscribe to the Sound Ideas podcast. You can also find it at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or NPR One. We want to know what you think of Sound Ideas. Post comments at facebook.com/WGLTFM or tweet us your comments using the hashtag Sound Ideas. We're all WGLT News, and I'm Ryan Denham at Ryan@WGLT. Let's hear some more from Dominique Stevenson, a.k.a. V8 Vast Change. Here's his song, Summertime Fresh. He'll be at Night Shop tomorrow night. Playing for the title for the season came. That's why when it came, they were salty, man, yo. But that was back then. Now I'm trying to take a couple trips to a couple different countries. Ballin' on the budget, but we ballin'. Why they gettin' mad, can't call it. Mixtape droppin' in the summer. Hot like July, and you lie if you not a fan. I'll be in countries I don't understand. My only regret is I can't rap for Obama in the Oval Office. Dreamin' big, we lookin' at islands on the market. Yeah, what's next, man, I can't call it. Summertime fresh, take a breath in. Breathe out the stress, leave out the rest. Confess you're blessed, these be the best. These be the best times. Summertime fresh, take a breath in. Breathe out the stress, leave out the rest. Confess you're blessed, these be the best. These be the best times.
This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org. Bloomington Normal's public media.
I like that. Chillin' in the summertime.
Summer, summer, summertime.
Just chillin' in the summertime.
Summer, summer, summertime.
Chillin' in the summertime.